This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The UN Refugee Agency reports spreading violence in South Sudan's East Equatorial region is forcing thousands of civilians to flee across the border into neighboring Uganda in search of refuge.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, millions of people remain at risk in northeast Nigeria as humanitarian agencies struggle to overcome the effects of the Boko Haram insurgency. At least three family members were killed and three others in the family wounded when mortar shells landed in a Mogadishu suburb today. And the Gambia's opposition United Democratic Party wins big in parliamentary elections.
We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN Refugee Agency reports spreading violence in South Sudan's East Equatorial region is forcing thousands of civilians to flee across the border into neighboring Uganda in search of refuge. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency expresses alarm at the ongoing deterioration of the security situation inside South Sudan. It reports more than 6,000 refugees have arrived in Uganda since April 3rd, when violence erupted in the town of Pajok in the eastern Equatorial region. As fighting spreads to other towns, the UNHCR says an average of 2,000 refugees fleeing insecurity, violence, and famine are arriving in northern Uganda every day. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh says newly arriving refugees who claimed their town had come under indiscriminate attack by South Sudan's armed forces recount tales of horrific abuse.
Refugees report witnessing their loved ones shot dead at a close range, many being slaughtered, others arrested, including children. Families fled in different directions. The elderly and disabled who could not run were shot dead.
Balash says many people are still hiding in the bush. He says refugees report homes and properties were looted and burned, and armed groups are preventing people from escaping by blocking main roads out of town. Balash tells VOA the Ugandan government and aid agencies are overwhelmed by the numbers arriving, and there's no sign this refugee exodus is slowing down.
Humanitarian agencies don't have enough funding to help support those who are arriving. My UNHCR colleagues are on the ground, but we are struggling to feed these people. We are struggling to provide them shelter, safe drinking water, and medical care.
Balash calls this a losing battle, as UNHCR's humanitarian appeal for South Sudan of nearly $782 million is only 11% funded. Uganda currently hosts more than 832,000 South Sudanese refugees. An estimated 192,000 have arrived this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Millions of people remain at risk in northeast Nigeria as humanitarian agencies struggle to overcome the effects of the Boko Haram insurgency. Now, the militants are not the force they once were when their attacks began in 2009, but insecurity is still widespread and millions are now going hungry. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
For Jurg Kunal, solving the humanitarian crisis is, in the long run, a development issue. Kunal is regional coordinator for Northeast Nigeria for the UN Development Program, UNDP. He's based in the Borno State capital of Maiduguri, the birthplace of Boko Haram.
Overall, we have more than 2 million people that have been displaced since the onset of the Boko Haram crisis. And out of these 2 million people, 1.8 million people are still in Northeast Nigeria displaced. 80% of these are in host communities and only 20% in camps.
It's the time of year when food is harder to come by in this region. the estimated number of hungry people is higher than the figure for the displaced.
Right now we are arriving at the lean season in northeast Nigeria, which means that we are fearing that over 5 million people are facing serious food insecurity. And this situation might actually soon get worse, because with the lean season progressing and agriculture not being back on its feet and food prices shooting up to over 150%, we have to fear the worst, and possibly the whole region might be facing serious food insecurity in the next couple of months.
Boko Haram triggered the crisis with attacks and kidnappings, which caused widespread displacement in Nigeria and the Lake Chad Basin. Kunal says Boko Haram is still a force to be reckoned with, despite suffering at the hands of a multinational military force.
Boko Haram is still active in the northeast. The Nigerian army has done its best to contain the issue, so you don't have really an open front line anymore in Borno. But however, Boko Haram is now moving into more of a guerrilla tactics, which means that insecurity is widespread across the entire region, which basically means that farmers can't go back to their fields. Most of the fields, roughly 80%, haven't been farmed for the last 3 years.
The UNDP official says that won't change unless security is reestablished. Humanitarian agencies have been able to reach more areas in northeast Nigeria in recent months, but certain parts, like the southern part of Borno State and the far north, are still no-go areas. Kunal likens it to medieval Europe, with heavily fortified cities and vulnerable rural areas. He says a military solution alone will not solve the crisis, adding that communities must be rebuilt. But he adds that organized community self-defense must be a major component. Many communities have formed loosely organized vigilante groups to protect against Boko Haram attacks.
What really needs to happen very quickly is that little by little, you reestablish in a comprehensive way communities through a combination of police interaction with military, and also strengthening the communities themselves to get back their lives. So what has to happen right now, together with food aid and with support to agriculture, is also the support to basically professionalizing and streamlining the way that security is provided to the communities.
At the beginning of the year, humanitarian agencies issued a $1 billion appeal to deal with the crisis. Only about 5% of that has been received. Kunal says the funds are needed not just for food aid, but for rebuilding public infrastructure, housing, and the health sector, and to provide social security. He says when basic needs are met, people are less likely to join groups like Boko Haram.
When you offer people a livelihood that is credible, security for the children, then the incentive to move into Boko Haram is basically massively reduced. And the success of Boko Haram and the support that they have received from communities was, of course, based on widespread poverty. Frankly speaking, the northeast of Nigeria is worse than Sudan, Darfur, in terms of poverty figures, and that is the background for the success of Boko Haram to some extent.
The UNDP regional coordinator praises the U.S. for its massive food and education aid. For example, USAID, the development agency of the U.S. government, provides support to prevent young people from being radicalized and for demining operations. The Trump administration has proposed a nearly 30% budget cut for the agency, as well as the State Department. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has said development needs are a global challenge to be met not just by contributions from the United States, but through greater partnership with and contributions from our allies and others. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In related news, the head of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization is visiting northeast Nigeria today. José Graziano da Silva says if farmers miss the upcoming planting season, there will be no sustainable harvests in the region until next year.
And at least three family members were killed and three others in the family wounded when mortar shells landed in a Mogadishu suburb today. AFP reports the shell struck Danwadakta near a security checkpoint. Meanwhile, yesterday in southern Somalia, 19 people were killed when their minibus hit a landmine. Al-Shabaab militants are suspected in both incidents.
In In the Gambia, the opposition United Democratic Party won big in yesterday's parliamentary elections. The Independent Electoral Commission says the UDP won 31 of 53 seats in the National Assembly. Now, the UDP was one of seven opposition parties that formed a coalition against the longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh in the presidential election. Jammeh's former party saw the number of seats it held plummet from 43 to just 5. President Adama Barrow will make appointments for 5 other seats. Voter turnout was low this time around at just 42%.
The European Union Border Control Agency, Frontex, and various African countries have released a new report on migration trends. Reporter Josephine McKenna tells us about the report, as well as the rescue of more than 1,300 migrants yesterday on the Mediterranean.
This is a joint report produced by the European Union's border agency, Frontex, and various African countries. Together, they were looking at migration movements regarding people smuggling across Africa, cross-border criminality, and some of the security threats affecting countries in the EU and in Africa.
What were some of the trends that they found?
Well, what was interesting was they looked at some of the shifting trends in people smuggling. As we know now, there has been a trend away from land migration, the movement of people illegally across various countries by land in Europe. And of course, we know people smugglers are using the sea route. And this report noted that Egypt had become an alternative route to Libya, a departure point for Italy, particularly for migrants moving from the Horn of Africa countries and the Sudan in 2016. But the main route, the main transit hub, according to this report, is Agadez in Niger, moving people, as we know, from West Africa into Libya. And Mali is also seen as an alternative transit point for migrants who pass through the city of Gao.
I understand yesterday about 1,350 migrants were rescued in a dozen separate operations. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that was a major operation coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard. 1,350 migrants rescued in several different operations. One body was also recovered, and many of those migrants are now being transferred to the Sicilian port of Augusta. What's interesting is these migrants continue to arrive, as we know, despite the efforts of the Italian government and other governments in the EU to try and stop this flow of migrants. And just last Sunday, we saw an agreement between the Italian government and various tribes located in southern Libya. And this report that I mentioned earlier also noted that those tribes were very significant in controlling the flow of migrants passing through Libya. And it's still unclear whether the Italian government's efforts are really going to do much to slow down this flow.
Also, I understand the report mentioned drug smuggling. Can you tell us more about this aspect of it?
Well, this is another area that affects Africa and the EU Frontex border agency. This report said that drug smuggling represented the most profitable activity for organized crime groups active in northern Morocco. And it also mentioned cocaine trafficking through Africa as a stopover towards the EU market. This is perhaps nothing new, but it's interesting to see this once again being highlighted, that production and distribution centers for cocaine have emerged in the Ivory Coast, Benin and Guinea and Nigeria, as well as heroin networks targeting the African middle class. That was an interesting finding, I thought, from that report as well.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
South Africa's political tensions were on full display Friday as thousands of protesters gathered in major cities to demand that President Jacob Zuma resign. Thousands more rallied in support of the president, who faces a no-confidence vote in parliament later this month. VOA's Anita Powell attended several events in Johannesburg and brings us this story.
That's the sound of thousands of South Africans walking and shouting through the streets of central Johannesburg in the hope that one man, President Jacob Zuma, will hear their outrage. The president has already earned many critics for a raft of corruption scandals. But his recent decision to fire a well-respected finance minister who spoke out against him prompted those critics to call for a nationwide shutdown and protests on Friday. Many South Africans heeded the call, from Johannesburg and the nearby capital, Pretoria, to the city of Cape Town, where Archbishop Desmond Tutu joined an anti-Zuma march. Smaller protests happened in rural areas, with scores of tire-burning protesters running through the streets of the ruling party stronghold of Polokwane, and hundreds of residents marching peacefully through the seaside hamlet of St. Francis Bay. In Johannesburg, 46-year-old property manager Kenny Davids took the day off to voice his displeasure with the president. Davids, who is black, says he was once loyal to the party of Nelson Mandela, South Africa's first black president. He dismissed ANC supporters' arguments that to turn against the party is a form of racism.
It's not about race. It's about the country now. ANC liberated us, but they can't lead us now. It's not about now we must be stuck with ANC when they are doing wrong. No, we can't.
Outside ANC headquarters in central Johannesburg, thousands of Zuma supporters declared they will stand by their man. Hundreds donned the camouflage uniform of the ANC's now-defunct military wing and stood at attention around the building, preparing, they said, to defend against attack. In a nearby square, college student Patricia Maluzzi wore an image of Zuma's face on her shirt. Maluzzi, at 23, was born after the end of apartheid, but says she feels it's important to protect the gains made by the anti-apartheid movement.
I came all the way here to fight for what my late brothers and sisters fought for. I mean, Zuma is not the best president ever, but yet again I say people do make mistakes, and who am I to judge? Where did we get power? If we let him go right now, we're going to have to struggle again to start from the bottom to get the power.
President Zuma has so far remained silent about the mass movement against him, which includes the opposition parties in parliament. Lawmakers are scheduled to hold a no-confidence vote on April 18th. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Anita. President Zuma could face more challenges from inside his ruling African National Congress in the coming months. Reporter Delia Robertson says for now, the South African leader has successfully faced down his ANC critics. She explains to VOA's William Eagle how he did it.
Well, what he did is he invited to the meeting of the National Working Committee of the ANC, which happened on Monday, he invited the provincial chairpersons as well. And normally they don't attend, but when they do, it's called an extended National Working Committee. And so it happens from time to time. And a number of those individuals are his supporters. And so that is how he prevailed in that meeting. Whether it's as successful as it seems, it's clear to me, Bill, that there's been an absolute shift within the African National Congress, quite a seismic shift, you could say, and that there are a lot of people within the party who are now critical with him and do not support the cabinet reshuffle and are very concerned about efforts on his part to allow control over the government by his friends, the Guptas, who are a family who live in Johannesburg, a very wealthy family.
Is Zuma really under threat from within his own party, the ANC, and how could his critics move against him?
Well, the most likely place for this to happen would be a meeting of the National Executive Committee, which is a much broader meeting of ANC leaders. And it seems to me, Bill, that within the party, those who've come out against him publicly in recent times at the senior level are Cyril Ramaphosa, Zwelin Mkhize, and Gwede Mantashe. There are others who are not as public, but who no longer support him publicly in the way that they did. So it seems to me that those people may believe that they now could win enough support at the next National Executive Committee meeting, which has not been scheduled yet, but that they feel that they might have enough support to take action against Zuma.
To what extent has anti-Zuma sentiment spread within the ANC and its allied organizations, such as the South Africa Communist Party or COSATU?
Well, in fact, both the Communist Party and COSATU came out publicly against Zuma last week and again this week. And the South African Communist Party, which has been in alliance with the ANC since the 1950s, is now talking about going it alone as a separate entity entirely. And that will come up for discussion later this year. COSATU was formed in the late 1980s and has been in a formal alliance with the ANC since it was unbanned by Mr. de Klerk in 1990. And they, for the first time, have publicly not supported the ANC in this decision and are marching against him today.
Delia, I understand that there was expected to be a no-confidence debate or motion in Parliament within a couple of weeks. What can you tell us about that? Is that a chance to either register one's displeasure with the leadership or even potentially remove President Zuma?
It would depend whether African National Congress members support the motion in Parliament, which has been brought by opposition parties. In the past, they have not done so. This will be the fourth such motion. And one of the problems is that in terms of the current rules of Parliament, such votes are not secret. They're public votes. And within South African politics, the party whips in Parliament can lay down a party line, and all the members of the party have to toe that line if they're in the House. The only way they can avoid doing that is by being absent. So it would depend on whether any members of the ANC and how many of them would be willing to publicly support that vote in Parliament. I kind of doubt whether that would be the place that Zuma would fall. I think it's far more likely to happen within ANC structural organizations.
That was reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg. She was speaking with William Eagle.
Football's governing body, FIFA, announced today it lost nearly $370 million last year and expects to lose about $490 million before taxes this year. It blames scandals, bad investments, and accounting changes. FIFA's cash reserves have fallen from $1.4 billion in 2015 to about $500 million last year. FIFA hopes to recoup some of those losses when the next World Cup is held in 2018. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturday. Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.